This is Gary Wakefield, and you're listening to Queer Life Stories.
Hey, my name is Rudy, or RJ. I'm 23 years old, and I'm a trans non-binary person from Melbourne who uses he, him pronouns. My family's always been very good in the way of both my parents are very much just like, get into whatever you're going to get into, just kind of do your own thing, you know. So growing up, I never really felt kind of cornered in to like who I was allowed to be, you know, because growing up, I think a lot of the time, kids kind of look at their parents as for signalers of like what's okay and what's not okay. So for me, I kind of was able to explore and get into whatever I wanted to, which I think really played into the kind of self like exploration and discovery I sort of found myself doing. So, you know, as a kid, I was very, I don't know, it's really odd. I think my mum, and I could be wrong, but I remember her once describing me as like quite a shy kid. I wasn't shy as in like hide behind, you know, my mom's knees or whatever, but I think I was quite reserved. And you know, I like listening, unless it's something that I'm really, really into and then I just can't stop talking about it. But, yeah, so as a kid, I kind of was more of like a watcher and I like to stick to my own kind of things. And, you know, me and my sister are very close in age, so we kind of just acted like twins. We were always together. And you know, I was like into sports and I play a lot of sports and I played a lot of sports as a kid. So I was very active. I was like kind of just being a menace with my sister a lot of the time. So that was kind of me as a kid. Would I say like I was like a stereotyped tomboy? No, I wouldn't say that at all. Which is really odd because I think, you know, especially like having, I had to do my sessions for my WPATH letter for my top surgery like recently, and the psychologist obviously was talking to me about, you know, growing up and whatever, and he said to me like, oh, you know, how were you as a kid? And we kind of, yeah, we kind of did kind of unravel that I wasn't really like a tomboy, and I wasn't ever super concerned with like wanting to be with the boys and as a boy kind of thing. I just wanted to be where I wanted to be, kind of irrespective of like what that meant, for a lot of situations. So, you know, like I was really into fashion and dressing up and kind of just playing with whatever toys. And like, I think as I got older into like, you know, 10, 11, 12, I kind of realized that there was like gender associations with things, you know, like blue equals boy and like pink equals like girl, like really dumb things like that. And that's when I started, I think, being more selective of like the things that I chose to do or the things I chose to associate with, particularly like publicly. It's really hard, I think, to describe myself, you know, because I think I'm someone that kind of goes through a lot of phases, and I can really like look back on, you know, parts particularly of my like adolescence and just go like, oh, like it was this year and I was into that and these are the things I did, and like, well, I'm very like categorical like that. So yeah, I think coming out as trans, I have definitely like not changed as a person, but I've realized recently that there was a lot of things that I was learning about myself as I was learning about myself as a trans person growing up, like in my teenage years, that I actually didn't realize that I chose to just kind of try and sever from myself. That now coming out as trans, I almost feel like I am a new person, not because I've picked up these new things, but because I've like remembered the things that I tried to cut off from myself growing up, which is kind of very like overwhelming in some ways, you know, because there's a lot of things that I thought like weren't me, you know, but they are. And I didn't kind of, it's kind of weird wading through all that stuff. I'll like meet someone new and they'll like obviously, you know, remind me of something, or you get flashbacks of all kinds, you know, all the time to things that like you kind of forgot about, and then you remember them and you're like, oh my god, like what? Like, I thought that wasn't, you know, a thing, but yeah, so.
Is it just you and your sister growing up, or did you have other siblings?
So it's just me and my sister. So we are, I think, technically 18 months apart, but like essentially, yeah, a year and a half apart. Although to be honest, I've always, except for like obviously when we were little and we're still growing physically, I always get put as the younger sibling, like always. Like she is a fashion stylist, and she, when she was doing one of her diplomas, I went to see her final showcase, and one of her lecturers, like, even though by this point I'd graduated from my undergrad, so like I was like should have been looking a little bit, you know, aged, and one of her tutors were like, oh, it's so nice that you've brought your younger brother here. And I was like like at the time I think I was like 22, maybe just like on the brink of 22, and I was like, I'm older than her. Like, I don't know if it's the heel she's wearing, but like maybe it was a backpack I had on, I'm not sure, but like yeah. So our dynamic is very chaotic, because in ways that she's very mature, I'm not very mature, and vice versa, so it's we keep people on edge. We were pretty, yeah, definitely inseparable as kids. I used to, so, you know, at like 3 or 4, I used to unhook her bassinet thing and literally like assist her to climb over as a toddler, and then we'd like run around the house or whatever. Or like just pick her up and get her out of her cot or whatever she had. So yeah, we were very inseparable as kids. But I think as the pressures of schooling, particularly like later primary school and all the way through high school, we didn't really talk, and I feel really bad about it, but I think like we were just kind of going through our own things. And I remember like realizing something was kind of off when like people would ask me where she was or what she was doing, and like I'd, you know, it wasn't that she was running off to places she shouldn't have been. I just legitimately didn't know what she was up to or what she was into. So I kind of knew something like had gone amiss, because obviously we'd spent our childhood very close. And thankfully, like after we kind of both got out of high school, because I graduated and she left high school, you know, I graduated year 12 and she left high school to do her fashion diploma. So once we both got out of that space, we, you know, became close again. And now like, yeah, she's definitely my best friend, so.
Did you grow up in Melbourne?
Yeah, so I've never left Melbourne. I've never been out the country. I have the place that I've been to the most is Tasmania, actually.
Oh, really?
Which is really bizarre. Yeah, I've been to Tasmania like 4 times, which for me is like a lot. Most of it has been to play badminton, but to be honest, like, you know, I mean, I do genuinely enjoy Tasmania, but yeah, I just grew up, was born in Melbourne, grew up in Melbourne. My dad's English and my mum is Australian, so yeah, we've just kind of spent a very typical, you know, life in Melbourne. Just hanging out, just having fun. Yeah, so I mean, I love Melbourne. I mean, apart from probably England, where obviously my dad's family is from, I don't really have any like places that I feel would honestly, I don't know, give me as much joy as Melbourne does. But though, to be honest, I haven't been to anywhere else, so I can't say conclusively, but you know, yeah, I love Melbourne. I haven't really had a reason to leave, so.
How old were you when you started to think about gender identity?
It was really young. So, like, I mean, I've been talking about it a lot recently, Particularly in the last like 6 to 8 months, you know, with friends, with like healthcare professionals or whatever, you know, doing more things like this, you know, with you today. So I have kind of picked up on things that I'd never really thought about. For me, there was a few moments when I was very, very young that I realized that I didn't want to be a girly girl, but that's all I really knew. Because that's all I was really told, you know, that was as much information as I had. So that's kind of what I assumed of myself. So that was, you know, young, like, you know, 10, 11. When I started going through puberty though, and particularly when my friends started to go through puberty, because I think on the physical visual level, I sort of went through it a little bit later than the people I was hanging out with. So I saw them, and like, my first thought when I saw my friends like getting really excited about, you know, getting, you know, their first bra or whatever, like, I was like, no, cancelled, this isn't happening to me. Like, at the time, I didn't mind anything else that was happening, you know, periods and stuff like that. I really could not have cared less about that, because I was like, oh, my body's gonna do it, like, it's already happened. But considering like my chest hadn't started to kind of develop, I was like, there's got to be a way to stop this, which obviously there's not. But that was kind of the first thing I remember. Then I guess like I was kind of on the internet pretty young and watching Glee and stuff. So I kind of had an idea, and I had friends on the internet that were like trans and stuff like that. So I don't know. It kind of was all happening very young, you know, like 13, 14, that kind of thing. I came out as queer, or like just not straight, to my parents and like my close friends, like basically everyone at school, like when I was 12 and a half. Yeah, so that was like, I just kind of rolled into year 8 and I was like, you guys, you're all correct. Here I am. Like, so, you know, that was kind of like, to me, that was nothing. Whereas the trans thing was very, very complicated, because I, you know, as I said earlier, I've never really been like a stereotype tomboy. So I was very confused, because I was like, I don't want people to see me as a girl, but I like fashion. You know, and at the time, like, I found it really hard, because I enjoyed the aesthetics of very femme things, and I've always like gone through phases of enjoying femme expression. And because I think at that really particular stage when I realized that I wasn't cisgender and I was in a phase of like high femme, it just kind of blew my mind. I didn't really know how to think about it, so I was like, well, like, oh, I'm just being an idiot, like, I'm not trans, like, oh, really, stop it, like, that kind of thing was happening. So, like, at 14, I was like, no, like, oh, it's just a phase, just wait it out, like, whatever. Got to 16, and I was like, it's not a phase, but I feel really terrified that particularly, like, the straight cisgendered boys that I was interested in, and that, more importantly, were interested in me, I was scared that if I told them, or if I like just came out in general, that they wouldn't like me, which is obviously always going to be like, I guess if you're stealth in particular, like, or haven't told someone, that's obviously going to be a fear, and that, you know, is never going to go away for some people. But, you know, at 16, for someone who had like incredible self-doubt and incredible, like, not self-esteem issues per se, but like just a big fear of people liking me just in general, do you think that like a core part of my identity would be like potentially the make or break for someone wanting to be my friend or being like romantically interested in me was like too much of a con to tell them about? So I literally just decided, like, for the sake of my social life, like, and it sounds really vain, but I mean, in essence, like, you've got your physical health and then you've got your social health and mental health, and I just thought, like, for the sake of it, I can't do this. I'd rather act like I would rather put my energy and effort and emotional labor into essentially forging this act that even to me is believable than risk, like, you know, roll the dice on my life. Because I felt like if coming out was going to damage me emotionally. I was scared that it was going to be too much and it'd like actually make me suicidal. So like I didn't want to do that, obviously. So I was like, I'll do anything but like afford myself to that place. So, you know, it was pretty tough. I came to terms with being trans when I was probably, like, I'd gotten out of a really long, well, to me it was a long relationship, it was like 3.5 years. I was with this cisgender guy, and I kind of, we just fell out of that relationship, to be honest, and it was about 1.5 years of, like, just general self-discovery, because, like, I'd been with this person from, like, 17 to, like, 20, ish. So they're like very formative years, and like now I understand that they're like super like informative years, and I spent them with this singular person living this singular kind of narrative life of being like for the most part very like heteronormative, and the queer part of me was never really expressed because I again was so scared that like he and you know everyone I'd surrounded myself with at that point wouldn't accept me, you know, as for like truly who I was. So once I kind of had that 1.5 years of self-discovery after that relationship, you know, I realized that I had nothing to lose because I've already felt like that relationship to me was like my whole life and the friends I had there was my whole life. And because I already felt like I'd lost my whole, like that version of my life, I was like, what have I got to lose now? Like, who am I? I'm no one. And I guess like that sounds really negative, but I truly believe like in like foregoing your ego and foregoing the expectations and stuff that you have of yourself and just realizing that you have a choice in every decision that you make and every choice that you have, you know. And I was like, I've got nothing to lose. I might as well just go for it. And that's where it's brought me today. So
who was the first person that you told that you were trans, and how did that conversation go?
Well, it was really odd actually, because the story, like, and this is really funny because I always feel like I'm talking about Jeremy, who's this, like, my best friend still to this day. But I mean, if it wasn't really for him, I don't really feel like I'd be on, like, I don't really feel like I would have had such a good time with like my journey of like being transgender. And I feel like, you know, there will be other people that can attest to this, that you know, it was other people that kind of just turned the light bulb for them, I suppose. But I didn't actually come out to anyone for a long time myself because I was like too like self-conscious. So my friend Jeremy, we were friends in year 7 and 8, and I was a year above him, and our school split in 2 campuses, so you know 7, 8, and 9 is like in one campus and 10, 11, 12 in the other. So when I went was going into year 10, he was still in when I was in year 10, he was still in year 9, so we were split and we didn't see each other for a year. And then the following year he came over to the campus having moved up a grade in school, and he was like, hey, oh my god, I haven't seen you for a year. Oh, I'm Jeremy now. And I was like, oh, sick, cool, hi, like that. And literally we have this joke that I've not once misgendered him ever, like even from that release, like I don't know, even from that very moment that he told me his name. But we were just having conversation, and I think one day he was like, do you want me to use they them pronouns for you? And I was like, oh, why? And he goes, oh, I don't know, just, do you want me to just do it? Like, do you mind? And I was like, oh no, go ahead. And so that from there, we kind of just had more conversations, and that was kind of the way it went. But yeah, for ages, if we met anyone new, like he would always introduce me because I was always like so scared. But the first person I think like past that point, particularly like maybe when I was older, I can't really think, because often like if it's been with a group of friends, it's just been like me talking about my like anguish with my gender identity. I haven't actually feel like, apart from maybe my parents or my sister, I've really said to someone, like, oh, I'm trans, like, this is who I am. And, like, if it's someone new, like, either, like, they're already queer and they're gonna ask me for, like, my pronouns or, like, wait for me to say or something, or, you know, like, at work, I, like, in my retail job, I always, like, you know, if I meet a new staff member or whatever, I always say my pronouns and then ask for theirs. So I don't really feel like I've had explicit coming out conversations. Even like when I emailed my other employment, which is like with a private school, I sent it out in an email and like they were just like, yeah, sick, we've changed your like your staff records and like we've emailed this, like, you know, can we email this to all the staff you associate with, like. And then that's it, boom, I never was misgendered again. So, yeah, I've been extremely lucky. I've not had any kind of provocative coming out, you know, conversations. There have been a couple of situations where I have been I wouldn't go as far to say it's abused, but I suppose harassed in public, which is kind of really odd to me, because if I'm interacting with like a staff member of a store or a customer service rep for like a company or whatever, I'm just flat out misgendered. Like, there's just no questions. Like, I'll always be referred to by she pronouns. Like, I've been on testosterone for 2 years. Albeit the first year was like a very small dose, and the second year, like, which is kind of 2019 to now, is a full dose. So I'm kind of still at the start, but I'm just, if I'm like talking to someone, I'll just get flat out misgendered, and to me it just sucks. But you know, for the most part, up until particularly like when kind of COVID started, it kind of wasn't bothering me, because I looked in the mirror and I was like, yeah, well, I can kind of see why they wouldn't really initially, you know, assume my gender to be male or whatever. But I think, you know, particularly after I have top surgery, which is like next week or whatever, I'm gonna feel more. Yeah, I am excited about it. I haven't kind of gotten the groove yet, and I'm not very good at like getting excited before it's like the 11th hour. But yeah, you know, I think I'm gonna be more irritated at it, because I feel there's this kind of feeling of unjust, of like, well, I've spent all this money and time and emotional like labor, and like people still won't recognize me, which I think is just like something I have to come to peace with. But like, I have been harassed on the street. There's been a couple of times, like I was walking down to Flinders Street Station in like broad daylight, and this businessman just lurched out at me, and excuse my slur, but he was just like, what the fuck are you doing out here, fag? And I was like just as he was walking past, and I was dressed in like kind of form-fitting clothing, and you know, to me, I hadn't had much like fat distribution like happen yet, so I was looking quite feminine, to be honest. Like, I wouldn't have like assumed myself to be male at the time, and I was like, okay, and I kept walking, and he kept walking, and you know, it was just very much like sliding doors kind of moment there. But that, I was like shocked, like that I've never had that happen to me before. And then kind of afterwards, maybe a couple of months later, I was walking down another street in the CBD, and I had someone kept trying to catcall me, and you know, they were using like feminine pronouns and feminine kind of language, I suppose. And then I had to walk past them. I literally couldn't avoid them unless I wanted to double back on myself. And I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna forge past. I'm late to get to work or whatever. And I don't remember explicitly what they said, but like, it was something to the tune of, they continued using this feminine language towards me, and then because I was wearing shorts, as I got up closer and they could see me, they saw my like leg hair, and they were like, oh, what's that on your legs? I thought you were a woman, now I don't know what the fuck you are. And I was like, and like that, and from there, like, obviously I quickened up my steps, and I was like trying to get past them as fast as I could, and I tried to shut them off, because I was very shocked, because I was in like a very close radius to them, and for all I knew, they could have, you know, been wanting to follow me. But they did continue to shout stuff and then shout about me to like the general public, and I was very shook after that. Yeah, so Yeah, it's pretty odd. Like, I feel moments like that for me, I quickly just compartmentalize them, because I feel like if I was to think about that sort of stuff to a very deep level and kind of relive it, I would feel very scared for myself. You know, and even just those two instances, like, I'm worried about, you know, when we are all safe and well to go to like nightclubs, and, you know, having had top surgery, and, you know, one of the things I would like to do is like work some kind of mesh situation on my like torso, and, you know, wear makeup and whatever, and perhaps look a little bit androgynous, and I'd be worried, say, walking down a street, even in the city, and have a comment made towards me, and, you know, because of what's like those two comments that have already been made, because, like, obviously I didn't feel like I was doing anything to draw attention to myself. You know, I wasn't wearing colorful clothing. I wasn't shouting at the top of my lungs, making anyone, you know, look at me. And yet, like, I still had these two people just like kind of get in my space and shout at me. So, you know, it does make me worried. Am I still going to do it? Yes. But obviously I'm going to be vigilant about it, which is kind of a shame. Like, I shouldn't feel like, no one should feel like they need to do that, just to wear a top that they want to wear. Like,
has your gender identity ever stopped you from taking an opportunity to do something?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. It's like tricky to sort of quantify, because, like I said, I've just started to unpack things, but, just thinking about like kind of more adult decisions, you know, not adult decisions, but like decisions I've made for myself. Like, I played a badminton growing up all my life. Like, that's most of my job, being a badminton coach. So I played that growing up, and I was a state, you know, representative, a state level player from like 9 or 10, maybe it was 11 by the time I actually played in the state team, and until, you know, now, I guess. I haven't played in a state team for 2 years. Yeah, last time I played was in 2018, but it was after the 2018 Nationals that I decided that I can't keep playing badminton, because I can't go through the emotional trauma of playing in the women's section anymore. Like, I got through it as a kid because I think, like, I was in it. I was like so determined to like do well and like whatever. Maybe it didn't come across that way. Like, you know, you were watching me, you probably thought like I didn't want to be there, but like I really did. Yeah, and I kind of just sort of made do and coped with it. But as an adult, and particularly like 2018 was kind of the year I started to come out, and I started to look at, you know, HRT and testosterone. So I played that Nationals in the February, I think it was, and I was like, I'm out. Like, that's it. I played for the state one last time. Goodbye. You know? Yeah, so that was kind of a decision that I feel was directly because of, like, my gender identity. Badminton's a very small sport, and they're making moves now, particularly in Victoria. I just did a panel as part of their series called Love All Play, where, you know, I was part of a panel with some other really great, like, queer advocates in the badminton community in Victoria, about what we can do to be more inclusive. And so from here on in, I do full-heartedly believe that you know, we will move towards being more inclusive of everyone in the LGBTQI+ community, but particularly trans inclusion and gender diverse inclusion. So hopefully, you know, when it, like everything, when it's safe to do and when we can do it, I'll hopefully be able to jump in and start playing. Not that there was any like ruling that said like I can't, you know, trans people can't do this or do that. It was just very much like a classic case of like nothing's written down and I appear to be the only person wanting this. I don't want to be the person to open the can of worms. But yeah, so that's one thing I definitely feel like I chose to miss out on, yeah, because of my gender identity.
You said you've done a couple of panels and you're starting to reach out into the advocacy space, I guess. How important to you is it to be involved in the LGBT community and speaking out?
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting, actually, because growing up, and even in my, like, early, like, you know, 19, 20, 21, even, like, 22, I didn't fully grasp why it was so important. And I just thought, like, I don't know if it was just at the time, like, I didn't really understand how much advocacy and how much speaking out actually achieved. And I truly think that it was probably that, you know, piece of the puzzle that I didn't really grasp as, you know, as to why I didn't really want to do anything like that. But, in, you know, it kind of came up in a counseling session, actually, I had really early on in, like, trying to shed myself of the shame of being trans. And my counselor just kind of leant, like, forward to me in this one session, and she was like, I don't know why you don't speak about this more often. Like, you're a writer, like, my degree, I have a degree in writing. She's like, you're a writer, you clearly are very good at speaking, like, whatever, which I don't know if she's completely correct, because I, whatever, but you know, you like speaking, you like sharing, you like teaching. I don't know why you don't do this. It's really important. And it was kind of just that. It was very affirming for me at the time that kind of got me into it. So I spoke to a couple of people who do speaking and talks, and, you know, I looked at more writing. And at the time, I kind of got into doing some, like, freelance pieces for, you know, online publications, first, you know, for personal essays and stuff like that. And that's kind of how I put my toes into it. But it's very important, because if you don't have someone speaking up about an issue of human rights and of human respect, then you're relying on what the people in power are telling you about that group of people in the community. And unfortunately, if you have someone in power who is not uplifting and making the experiences of these people equitable and equal to everyone else, then they are just, unfortunately, blatantly disrespecting and not providing enough, you know, like, love and care, essentially, you know, to that community. So without the people in there, you know, in that community themselves, and without allies saying and shouting and, you know, sharing stories like humans have done for our whole existence, that's how we distribute information, that's how we learn and teach people, by sharing stories. If we don't have that, then how are we to progress, and how are we to be all equal? So that's kind of, yeah, why it's so important. I think in terms of, like, TERFs, so trans exclusionary radical feminism, or feminists, I think that's, from my experience and knowledge, I think that's where the whole let's kick the T out of LGBT comes from, which I just think that, you know, we don't really need to have a huge conversation about that, because I just think that fundamentally that's wrong, because trans people exist, we are valid, we are real. So for someone to want to exclude us out of anything just is inherently wrong. Because we are humans, and being trans doesn't mean that you're not gay. Being trans doesn't mean that you're not a lesbian. It doesn't mean that you're not demisexual or asexual or intersex. You know, it doesn't, we're not excluded from the rest of the spectrum. We're in there just as much as anyone else. So I think that, you know, that kind of sums it up. In terms of what needs to be done, I think it just, like being gay, like being anything but straight, I think it needs to be normalized, and we need to get to a level where understanding someone's understanding someone's gender identity as something that's not cisgender needs to be as normal as mentioning your, like, if you're a gay man, mentioning your husband at a dinner party or at work. And I would really, really like to be able to strive to that point, but it's not something that is, you know, an A to B jump. There's so many things that come into that. We need equal healthcare. We need access to healthcare. We need our healthcare to not cost a bajillion dollars. We need healthcare professionals to understand us first and foremost, because the amount of times that I've heard stories of people being misgendered, being having conditions put down to being trans when they're just nothing to do with, like, gender identity at all. You know, particularly when it comes to reproductive health, we need to have more access to change our names and to change our gender and sex markers on our birth certificates and legal information. That whole process needs to be made much more streamlined. We shouldn't have to ring around every bank and subscription service that we've got just to kind of, you know, make everything on the same page. We need better access to adopting. We need to not feel like we can't be honest with someone, a professional of any kind, about who we are and our history, in the fear that we'll be discriminated against. We need to not feel ostracized in a classroom. We need sex and health education to be more equal and to be inclusive of trans health and the trans experience in the bedroom, you know. There's just, name a part of life, name an aspect of life, and there is something to be done for trans people there. It's incredible. People think that we have, you know, same-sex marriage legalized and we're good to go. Like, they're just so far from right when they say that. You know, people who can't change their gender marker or their sex marker on their birth certificate are still being put down as, for want of a better word, a heteronormative or a heterosexual marriage when it's not even correct, you know? So it's just mind-boggling the amount of things that are left to do.
The government was talking for a little while about the Religious Freedom or the Religious Protections Act. What are your thoughts on that and the implications that might have on the LGBT community?
Yeah, well, I think it's a really precarious situation because while it's protecting the so-called freedoms of one thing, it's completely destroying the freedoms of human beings What doesn't make sense to me is it wants to destroy the respect and freedom of human beings in the place of an idea that doesn't intrinsically exist. We've just created it. You know, for all intents and purposes, religion is an idea, and it's just religion only works in practice. So, you know, to want to put legal barriers up in front of religious ideas and ideologies in action over protecting human rights and freedoms and health and safety is just, that's something that I can't comprehend, and it's completely irrevocably irrational. You can't rationalize it. The threat of it to me personally was very real when I was creating the email to send to this private school that has a religious background. And it would go for any real religious schools that I would work for and have worked for in the past, in that, you know, I once read a child safety and, like, kind of pamphlet for a school that I was delivering a coaching clinic at that explicitly had taken out the part of not being able to discriminate against someone for their sexual orientation. You know how that's like a standard thing in like anti-discrimination acts and stuff in schools? Well, like, I've read plenty of them, and this school had particularly left it out. Now, obviously, take that to court and it's not, they can't say that. But the real, like, the fact of the matter is if this law was to be passed, they are full within their right to take that to court and then win on that. So for me, it was really worrying because I did think that at the time, you know, the timeline for this this act or this bill or whatever it was unclear. It could have been passed within a matter of days, as far as I was aware. Well, not maybe a matter of days, but like, you know, in the foreseeable future. And so when I was thinking about, you know, coming out as trans to this school where I was and am wanting to forge a career in, I was like, are they just going to turn around and kick me out? Does that mean that I can't coach for private schools anymore because everyone will see that I got fired from this place? And what would I do? And I had someone who I work with very closely ask me if it was something that I would take to the media or take to a high level like that. And I was like, I'm 22, man. Like, I don't want to. Why do I have to do that? Like, why? Like, that's so stupid. Like, a huge institution hypothetically wants to kick me out their door, and then I don't feel powerful enough turning around and saying like that's not right when it's written in the legislation of the whole country that they're allowed to do that. So, you know, that was a very stressful time for me because there was some points where I was really not going to do it. Like, I wasn't going to send that email. So I think the implication is bigger than people think, you know, like will small business owners turn away customers because they think or know that they're from the LGBTQI+ community? You know what? There would be some, but for the most part, no, I don't think people would really turn around. But would big institutions with a lot of power do it? They do it already. They would do it in that situation. You know, I don't have any kind of thoughts to tell me otherwise. So, you know, that's kind of where it stands with me. It's just, yeah, I hope it doesn't get passed.
How would you describe non-binary to someone who can't see beyond two genders?
Yeah, this is really interesting. Describing non-binary to someone that can only kind of see the perspective of two genders is, for me, can be quite a personal experience because I think it depends on how, like, what kind of language they're using and what they know. So, you know, I have explained it differently to different people, but in a general concept, I think the easiest way to explain it is to first break down the fact that, I think it's different. Like, if they can accept that, like, trans, like, binary trans people exist, and that you can, in their minds, just go from one to the other, I think then you have to really, maybe talk to them about it on a sex level, like, you know, chromosomal level sort of thing. But, you know, if they kind of don't understand the concept of being transgender at all, being gender diverse at all, I think it's easier to explain being non-binary to someone as that gender identity is something that is fundamentally constructed by society, just like money is. And money is very important. It is a huge factor in people's lives, sometimes too big. And because when you create something, it doesn't mean that it's not important or not valid in a situation, just as gender identity is. So while we've created the constructs of gender identity, it doesn't make them any less valid, just in the same case of money. So with the knowledge that we've created these constructs and these gender roles and these expressions of gender, and we've put language to those visual expressions, like male and female, like mask and femme, like androgynous, like anything else, individuals who identify as non-binary have really just taken all of that information and they've empowered themselves to use the words and use the visual cues that they've gotten from their environment and from the world to pick the expression, both in the physical sense and in the linguistic sense, that best and most accurately describes them. So they're just able to see past the very basic explanation of things that we are given and fed from a child and birth, and see past that and see the real value in the other so-called labels and things like that, and just found those collective group of things to use to express themselves, both on, you know, with clothes and with words. I don't know if that's a very like overthought way of thinking about it, but I mean, that's definitely the way I explain it, because for me, my expression is it's not fluid. Like, I don't feel fluid in, like, I kind of roll from one place to the other. But I definitely feel like I go through bouts of experiencing a desire to want to, you know, dress and express more femme and express and dress, like, more masculine. But, like, you know, for a very, very simplified version, I think being non-binary just means being in a galaxy rather than, like, an A to B spectrum. And I think the same is applicable for people, you know, I've heard the same expression being used, in the place of, being on the, like, autistic spectrum and, like, having ADHD and stuff like that. I feel like it's one of those things, like, there's no A to B, like, there's no line, nothing's really linear. So, I mean, I could get very philosophical, I'm sorry, like, yeah.
Did you want to give yourself a plug?
Yeah, so I have a podcast. It's called The Grind Refined. I do it with one of my best friends, Phil, and we have a semi-regular co-host, Duncan. Plus, every episode we have different hosts, like guests. Yeah, every episode we have guests on as well. It's a revival show of a university-run radio production I produced and hosted with Phil, called, back then it was called The Weekly Grind because we did it weekly. So we've kind of gone a play on words and called it The Grind Refined. It has absolutely nothing to do with coffee. It's just genuinely a shit talking show where we all, like, most of the time we end up talking about movies or films or games. But we try to dedicate episodes to particular topics. We have a Harry Potter special coming up that was unfortunately recorded before JK Rowling sort of really rolled down that slippery slope. It's a shame. I have a few Harry Potter tattoos and I feel really, like, conflicted about them, but...
What's next for you?
I don't know. What's next for anyone, really, at this point in time? I'm just kind of, not to sound like a complete millennial, just straight up vibing. No, listen, I would really like to continue being able to create things. And I think something that's come out of this period of, not necessarily isolation, although I have been isolated from my partner, for example. I've only seen him like 3 or 4 times in the last five or so months, you know, because of COVID. It's pretty bad, but I've been given the opportunity to really spend some time creating things, which I haven't had before, not in the way that it's happening now. Something that's quite of a menace in myself is I'm really bad at allotting time and energy to something. My executive function is horrendous, so being able to have literally 24 hours every single day to create something and to have that time to just fall into making something is been like somewhat of a blessing to me. So I've just been making things and trialing things and making huge mistakes and going back and doing them again and kind of stuff like that. So, you know, hopefully I'm going to take all of that and move forward and do a lot more writing and, you know, just connecting with the LGBTQI plus community. And just doing what I feel. I think, you know, long-term plan for me is just being a freelancer. And I would like to really open a space that's like a kind of, a performance, like one of my friends is an incredible burlesque performer, Lana Lunacy. I'm sorry, I gotta say it, but she's just brilliant. And we kind of thought of opening a kind of a burlesque performance space. It's a bar, but also provides rooms for individuals to come in and run their own workshops and kind of like more of a community space that kind of doubles as like a kind of a club of an evening. But that's just a pipe dream idea, to be honest, at this point in time. But I would really like to do something like that in the future, because obviously that's something that, you know, even growing up being under the legal age, I would have loved to have gone somewhere and been able to, I don't know, take part in a class with people, you know, like-minded people. So, you know, that's something. But the foreseeable future, I'm just kind of just doing whatever pops up. I'm sick of letting opportunities go by me, so I'm gonna grab at them and I'm gonna try and create them when I can. So if you're struggling with your sexuality or gender identity, don't feel like there's any sort of time limit to have anything decided and uncovered in its whole, in its wholeness. The fact of the matter is, as humans, we are consistently discovering things about ourselves and we're consistently learning about ourselves. So there's no need for you to have one word that's going to last you a lifetime. Don't feel bad for playing around with labels, playing around with pronouns. Have a go, have fun with it. You know, it's something that is very empowering and it's something that's very unique and special, and it is a huge part of what makes you you, and it does affect every single part of your life. But don't be whittled away down to just those words, because you are always going to be more than that, and you're more than the words that you choose to describe yourself, which is why in a way they're so important, but also why in some ways they don't matter. It's just about who you are and being true to yourself on that given day.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Really, this is really great.
It's been really awesome.
If you are struggling with your own mental health and you need support or assistance, please reach out to Lifeline on 13 1114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636. Both services are available 24/7. If you would like to share your story, talk about your experiences, or would just like to get in touch, you can email me at queerlifestories@outlook.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram. Just search for Queer Life Stories and send a message. This podcast is a no-budget, one-man operation to produce, but you can support this podcast by following, donating, or subscribing at Patreon. That's patreon.com/queerlifestories. In Tasmania, if you want support for sexuality, gender, or intersex status, you can contact Working It Out on 03-6231-1200. QLife provide anonymous and free LGBTI peer support and referrals for people across Australia wanting to talk about sexuality, gender identity, relationships, and more. They're available 3 p.m. to midnight every day on 1800 184 527, or web chat with them at qlife.com.au. You can hear future episodes of Queer Life Stories at Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Please follow, rate, and review. It does really help. We will be back soon. Take care of yourself and each other.